My name is Johnny, and I'm an addict.
Johnny!
And I truly love God's sense of humor. He brings me into a room full of people, puts me behind a podium, puts two microphones in my face, and says, talk about humility. And that's what the seventh step is about. I'm probably, I have like 30 minutes to talk about eight words, so I'm probably going to dance around it a whole lot, and then at the end I'll drop the bomb on you. Well, I'll go ahead and drop the bomb on you right now. The seventh step works. I need to talk a little bit about who I am, where I come from, and how I see this step. I know that you're good members of Narcotics Anonymous. You all have basic text. You all have sponsors. And most of you probably have the work guide. And if you hear anything out of my mouth that confuses you, I suggest you go first to your sponsor, second to the basic step, third to the step guide, and fourth to the cooker. No, don't go to the cooker. Go to a meeting. I really wish that at 2 o'clock this morning, all of you could have been in my apartment, in bed with me, listening to how I worked out the seventh step and how I was going to share it here, because it was perfect. I mean, you would have understood completely. On the way here today, I just kind of blanked, and I don't usually get nervous, but, you know, I realized that everything that I do in recovery leads me to the seventh step. You know, when I walked into detox February the 2nd, 1984, and said, please help me, I never want to use again. That was the first key sticking in the first lock. You know, later that day in detox, when I got on my knees and said, Lord, please give me what it takes to stay clean, because I do not know what that is, that was turning the key a little bit more. You know, when I went to an NA meeting on a Saturday, I went to the Salvation Army, and I went to an NA meeting on a Saturday night, and I heard a guy share it. And I asked him to be my sponsor. It was in a one of those candlelight meetings, and the room was dark. And these guys were in there, and they were really cool, and they were talking shit, and I really liked it. And the meeting was over with, and they were all standing by the door, and the room was still dark. And I went up to this guy, and I said, he said, yeah, what's going on, man? I said, I really need a sponsor. Do you think you could help me? And he got me by the shirt, and he walked me out in the hallway where there was a light. And he said, look at me. And I looked at him. He said, you know who I am? And I said, no. And he said, the last time you saw me, you were living with my wife, and you came to my house, and I thought you were going to punch me in the mouth, so I sat on the floor. And I thought, well, there goes this sponsor. But I had said a prayer. You know, I'd asked God to give me what it takes to stay clean. And he knew what it took for me to stay clean. I did not have a clue. All I knew at that time is that I was willing to do right then the next right thing. And that's been 17 years and 2 months. And generally, over that period of time, the bottom line for me has always been to do the next right thing whenever I could. I got this guy for a sponsor. He was the first person that I had been around in years that loved me enough to tell me the truth. He took me to meet one night. It was a second step meeting, and they were reading out the basic text, and I really liked it. And we were in the hallway afterwards, and he said, how'd you like to have a basic text? And I said, well, I'd love to have one. I thought he was going to buy me one. He said, they cost 4 packs of cigarettes. Don't smoke for 2 days. What the fuck is that? He said, buy a basic text and read it. Go to meetings. Call me. When I got here, I was 39 years old. I was a heroin addict. Or when we read that thing that says, we don't care about what you used or who your connections were. When I got here, I cared. If you did not shoot smack, if you had not been in the penitentiary, you were a hope fiend to me. You were not a dope fiend. I wasn't here very long before I realized that it was not about what I used, how much I used, where I'd been. It was about what my problem was and what I was willing to do about it. And that was whatever it took. know, I jumped into this program with both feet. You know, I'm the kind of guy that when I first got here, I would stick my hand up and share, you know, no matter what. You know, they'd say, the art of healing is in the art of sharing. And that's what I did. And when I first got here, I had no boundaries, no cut card. I would share anything. And when you do that, you get a lot of feedback. And I'm the kind of guy that, you know, I think the only thing worse than criticism is constructive criticism. You know, I didn't like none of that shit. I remember I had about 3 months, and I was living in the Salvation Army, and I had this job as like the security guy. And one morning I had to go up and wake up the cook, and I'm walking down this hallway, and there's three guys smoking cigarettes, and I hear one of them say, "Cool it, there's the police." I went and woke the cook up, and for about 3 hours, man, I walked around, my stomach churning, I was nervous. At lunch that day, I walked into the dining room, and this guy was sitting there with his friends, and, you know, I went up to the table and said some shit. I sold him a wolf ticket. You know, I said, you know, "You little punk-ass motherfucker, I fuck better men than you. If you ever call me the police again, you know, I'm going to bust your head open." Later that day, I called my sponsor. You know, I was really proud of myself. You know, I called my sponsor and told him about putting this guy in check. You know, my sponsor said, "What if he'd have called you a Mexican?" I said, "I'm no Mexican, man." He said, "Are you the police?" And I said, "No, I'm not the police." He said, "Well, you need to take a look at what you're doing and how you're acting." I got the basic text. I went up to my room. I started reading through the steps. Sixth step. It was right there. Then the seventh step. We humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. I said, I figured, you know, I'll do the seventh step. He'll remove all my shortcomings. And I won't have to worry about this shit. You know, I called my sponsor up and said, "I've just spent the last 15 minutes on my knees. I've asked God to remove my shortcomings." And I'll tell you how well it worked. 2 days ago, I called my sponsor about some stuff. He gave me directions. I did not want to do what the hell he told me. But I did it. It's no sense having a sponsor if you don't listen to him. I went to the bank. He said, "Go to the bank, get the manager, and tell him what's going on." I went to the bank. I got the manager. I told him what was going on. And I was sitting there. I explained everything to him. And I expected him to say, oh, that's right, you're Johnny G. You're okay. The computer made a mistake. Don't even worry about this deal. We'll erase the money off your thing, and we'll pay part of your credit card this month." He asked me some shit like, "Did you sign the check? Did you know when you cashed the check, you didn't have a $3 in your account? Did you know that, you know, you didn't get paid for 4 days?" I mean, stupid stuff. So, you know, after I finished, I went back to work, and I called my sponsor, and I told him what I'd done, and he said, "Doesn't that feel good? You crazy? Feel good? That felt like shit, man." I hung the phone up on him. 20 minutes later, I started realizing I'd written a worthless check. I'd went to a bank and asked the guy who runs a bank, you know, to ignore, you know, my irresponsibility. I came back to where I work, called my sponsor up, and hung up on him. I had to pay the bad check. I had to forgive myself for thinking I was special. And the worst part of it was I had to call my sponsor up, you know, and say, "You know, you're right. I'm sorry." Most of the things that, when I first got here, my sponsor, first sponsor said, "Most of the things that you will be required to do to stay here, you will not want to do." I've been here 17 years, and most of the things that I've been required to do to stay here, I have not wanted to do. I got here, I was a liar, I was a cheat, I was a thief, and I was the world's greatest victim. My defense for everything was so die. Someone else did it. I don't care what it was. It was somebody else's fault. I'm the kind of guy that I'm driving down the road 2 months ago, going 85 miles an hour, and I got the stereo popping, The police pull in behind me, pull me over, write me a ticket, and it's God's fault. You know, I don't like taking responsibility. When I got here, I did not know what the word responsibility meant. I did not know about interacting with people properly. I didn't know about accepting love. I knew how to trade. You know, people I grew up with, the people I hung out with, we made deals with each other. Each person had a specific job to do, you know, and a certain way they needed to act. And it wasn't about love. It wasn't about sharing who I was or taking back who they were. It was about getting over. I was like a magician, an illusionist. My number one job in life was to create the illusion that I was okay, that I felt good about myself, that I could take care of things, that I liked you, that I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to trust me. I wanted you to take care of me. I wanted you to give me stuff, but only what I wanted. I did not want to give a whole lot back because I didn't know how. In the time that I've been here, working the steps, the first step, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction. I was living in a mission downtown, Mitch Snyder's Mission for Creative Nonviolence. I had on bright orange tennis shoes, mismatched socks. The zipper was gone out of my jeans. I had two coats on, and I hadn't been near a shower in a month. It is not hard. It is not difficult to admit you're powerless when your ass is hanging out. It is not hard to admit you're powerless when you're hustling 24 hours a day and the drugs are not killing the pain anymore. I had long since stopped using drugs to party or to get high. In the end, I used for a few minutes. All I wanted was a few minutes where I could be okay, where I didn't have to think about what I had done yesterday, the day before, that morning, an hour ago. I just wanted to sit there and kind of be okay. And it wasn't working no more. No matter how much I used. You know, and it's a good possibility that I didn't get any dope the last month or so. Maybe everybody beat me every time I went uptown. I don't know. But I do know that it wasn't working. You know, so it's not when you get to that place where you're walking down the street and it's cold, and you got a Snickers candy bar and two bottles of vodka, and you're going to a mission, it's not hard to say this ain't working. You know, it ain't hard to admit powerlessness. When I got into recovery and I saw the second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The word sanity in there looked like a ship, a luxury liner, because I thought I was a piece of shit. You know, I thought I was the scum of the earth. You told me I was crazy. It was like, oh, wonderful. That's great. You know, crazy people can get well. Turds get flushed. You know, the third step, we made a decision to turn our will and life over the care of God as we understood Him. That one was kind of difficult. But, you know, I'd already admitted that I couldn't do it. I already admitted that somebody else could do it. And when I got a minute or two alone or with my sponsor, I knew that I was willing to do anything not to go back. You know, so the third step was like mandatory. I told somebody one time I was working on the third step, and this guy was really a loving guy and a cool guy. He said, Johnny Green, you could go out on the street corner and turn your life over to anybody, and I guarantee they would not do the shit to you that you've done to yourself. They would run it better than you did. Fourth step, I couldn't wait to do a fourth step. You know, I really wanted to go to a meeting and raise my hand and say, I'm Johnny and I did a fourth step, you know. My first fourth step was shit, but I worked hard on it. I wrote a lot of stuff that had nothing to do with anything. But it, you know, it was, I mean, it was pages of it, you know, and I mean, it was like one of those books you buy up on 14th Street, you know, bragging shit, you know. But I did. I snuck in a few things. I sat down and did a fist step with my sponsor. He said, you know, I'm kind of shocked you're a run-of-the-mill addict. I expected really big shit from you. Of course, a month later, I'm sitting in a meeting, and it dawns on me that I'd written 15 pages of shit. You know, there was no relief. I could go into a meeting now and say, you know, I did a fourth and fifth step, but you can't go to the sixth step, you know, without doing a good fifth step. And if you haven't done a good fourth step, you know, you got to go back and do the third step. You know, and the trick, you know, we don't have trouble with the fourth step. We have trouble with the third step. If I've done a good third step, made a decision to turn my will and life over, fourth step is sitting down and writing. That's all it is. But I can't do a third step if I haven't done a good second step. You know, if I don't have something in place when I sit down, I can't tell you. I can't put it on paper. You know? So I had to go back to the first step. I was powerless. I was crazy. There was somebody that could relieve that. All I had to do was turn it over to him. Sit down and do a real inventory. Sit down with somebody and tell them my stuff and have them tell me their stuff back. Then I could move to that sixth step. Of course, the first time I read the sixth step, you know, it sounded kind of woo-woo to me. Woo-woo. You know, and then the seventh step, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcoming. Yeah, right. I'm still here after 17 years. There's a group of people that know me really well that came here today to share with me. You know, when I got here, nobody wanted to share shit with me. I was coming up here this morning with this lady that I've known for 12 years. The phone rings in the car. It's her husband. I get on the phone with him. He says, you know something, Johnny Green? He said this in good spirit. He said, you drive 200 miles to hear yourself share. We'll walk around the corner to listen. That's partially true. When I look back over my shoulder and see the light, and it's my ass on fire, I will get my ass to a meeting, park it in a chair, and listen as only the dying can. When I screw things up so bad that I think it's, you know, unfixable, guess where I go? Six and seven step. I have no problem putting my hands up like somebody has a gun in my back and saying, God, please help me get through this without making it worse. And guess what? He always does. He always does. You know, I love this program. I mean, I truly love this program. Just the beginning of this year, we had a convention in Virginia, and it was right after Christmas, and I was having trouble with a woman, jobs, women, and money, that's my story. I quit my job. Nobody was going to talk to me like that. I didn't have any money. We had a convention in Virginia. My friend Ann's husband was going to speak on Friday night. I went there to hear this guy speak. I was going to stay a couple of hours, hear him speak, and move on. I got there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I left around 6 o'clock Sunday. I started crying probably around 5:30 Friday evening, and I stopped 2 miles from home. And when I cry, I'm not one of them guys that cries like... When I cry, it sounds like a beach whale. My friend Ann did a workshop. Bill T and Ann did a workshop. And I bawled the whole hour. But see, I needed it. I can't cry for me. No matter how fucked up things are, I cannot cry for me. But boy, I sure can cry for you. You know, I can watch a TV show and cry. Horrible shit happens to me and I suck it up. Shucks. If you're tough enough, you don't have to do a six and seven step. One of the things I've learned, too, is when I got here, my shoulders were about this broad. I could handle all the pain in the world. I've handled pain from the time I was 6 years old until the time I was 39. I've been in prison four times. 1977, three guys came across the bridge, came to my mother's house, kicked the door open, beat me in the head with a tire iron, stabbed me four times, took my pants down, set me on fire, and wrapped a phone cord around my neck and left me for dead. I went to jail 5 months later because I couldn't get on the witness stand and testify against them. They were on the second floor and I was on the third floor. I got betrayed by somebody that I had spent most of my life with. Suck it up, Johnny Green. Tough luck. I got about 10 years in recovery, and it dawned on me how much pain was in there, how much pain I was carrying around, how foolish it was, you know, to walk around James Brown. To walk around with all this stuff. See, here's the deal. I had like 10 or 11 years clean. I'm going to meetings. I've got a great sponsor. I'm writing inventories. I'm praying. I'm sharing. Yeah. One night I drove four states to speak at a convention, and nobody even hugged me. It was in West Virginia. The only thing the guy said before I left to go, he said, "They don't cuss up there." And I thought, how am I going to share for an hour without cussing? And some other stuff. I don't know. He told me some other thing, you know. Probably the clarity statement. And at that time, see, I agree 100% with the clarity statement. I did not agree with anybody telling me what I could say. You know, but I hear it read, and I say, yeah, that's cool. I like that. But if I want to violate that tradition, I want the right to do it. Or violate that. Anyway, to make a long story short, I'm working like a dog. You know, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. But every time I get close to victory, every time I get close, I do something, fuck it up. It's like I've got a hand grenade in my pocket. I pull. Thank you. Three or four years ago, I get a job. I'm a salesman. And I get a job in a car dealership as a finance manager. The guy that hired me said, it's going to be a little rough on you the first year. You probably won't make no more than about 75 or 80. But if you hang in here, I promise next year you'll make real money. I was dating some lady, and she didn't like me working late on Friday and Saturday night, so I quit the job. Why should I have any money in my pocket? You know, we broke up a month later. You know, I had to get to the place where, you know, what is going on here? I'm not stupid. I'm not lazy. What is going on? What's the missing ingredient around here? Because I've done it the very best, and I had done it the very best that I could do it. What was the missing ingredient? Humility. Willingness to go to the sixth and seventh step. You know, to acknowledge that there was somebody that could remove my defects, and then go to him and ask him to remove my defects without question. Oh, and believe me, you know, first time I got on my knees to do a real six and seven step, my head jumped timing. You know, I mean, it had 40 years of information about the times that it said God wasn't available. What about the time in the penitentiary? What about the Didn't matter. Didn't matter what my brain said. It doesn't matter today what my brain says. What matters is what I'm willing to do. The other thing I read just recently in the step, and I must have read the step 400 times, it's an ongoing process. You know, they called me and said, we're doing a convention. How about coming up and doing a workshop on the seventh step? I've been trained here not to say no. If they'd have said, well, you want to come up and sweep floors, believe me, I would have come up and swept floors. Come up and put chairs away. I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have done it. You know, My train just left station. I'm willing. No, I'm willing. Sure, yeah. When is it? Okay, don't worry about it, you know. A week later, I realized, you know, you must have a lot of balls going up in a convention and talking about the seventh step because it's a never-ending step. How do you get... I can tell you I did the first step. I can tell you I did the second step. I can tell you I did the third step. I can tell you I did the fourth, fifth. They're all apparent. My sponsor sitting there can say, yeah, he did all those. What's the seventh step? What is the outcome of the seventh step? Am I perfect? I got more humility. You know, more willingness. It's a trust step. I have, for 17 years, done this the very best that I can do it. I mean, there's a whole group of people that know me. They'll tell you, Johnny Green did it the very best he could do it. Broke, celibate, and unemployed. You know, that was the best. Borrowing money from my friends to pay the rent. Right? That's the best I could do. You know, so there's got to be some... And one of the things about this program that's so cool, it's forgiving. If you don't use, it's forgiving. God is forgiving of everything. But the program is real forgiving. It's not like I have to pay penance. You know, I don't have to go to 97 meetings and, you know, bow and all that shit. All I have to do is ask for help. Dear Lord, will you help me go to the next level? I don't like that. Dear Lord, will you help me work this so I'm not constantly in pain? See, last time I tried it, I tried a little manipulation. You know, God, would you please remove these defects of character so I can better serve you and people will glorify your name because I don't have any defects anymore. Yeah, right. I just wanted out of the shit I was in. And that's nothing wrong with that, folks. There's nothing wrong with wanting out of the shit that you're in. There's nothing wrong with being back into a corner and sticking your hands up. You know, I was sitting in the hallway before I came in here, and I was talking to somebody, and they said, do what so-and-so's father used to do. And I said, what's that? He said, tell him it doesn't work. That would be a lie. It does work. It does work. I have more willingness after I do this step to do the next right thing, to share a little bit more because I need help, to ask somebody, to ask God so I don't feel alone. I don't feel frightened. I'm not ashamed to say I have 17 years and I don't know how to do stuff. There's certain things that just elude me. You know, I still can go home and in the middle of the night wake up and be afraid. You know, I'm not even sure sometimes what I'm afraid of. Growing old, dying, being wrong. You know, dying and nobody comes to my funeral. That's all bullshit. You know, one of the things ain't going to happen here as long as I stay clean. I ain't never going to be alone. You know, and I have made enough friends here that if I die in this country... You know, some people will get together, you know, and Anne has promised that she will throw herself on my casket and cry. The only problem with that is I'm being cremated. God has said 5 minutes left. I'm just warming up. I plan on going on to the 8th. You know, this is the only place in the world that the worse your story is, the better you're accepted. You know, you think about it. The nice, shy people. Hi, how are you, Steve? I'm wonderful. I'm going home, you know. I'm in the room screaming. Everybody's wrapped around me. And I tried, believe me. I tried narcotics, I tried the penitentiary, I tried fantasy, I tried everything. You know, and nothing worked. Oh, penitentiary worked. You know, it kept me out of the street. But I did the same shit in the penitentiary I did out here. I never made any friends. You know, I got clean. My family wasn't even speaking to me. There was nobody missed me on the street. You know, there was nobody mourning my fucking loss. I could have went in an alley, shot up some dope, drank some vodka, thrown up, aspirated on my own vomit, laid in an alley for 3 or 4 days. You know, they could have taken me down to D.C. General, cut me up in little pieces. 4 or 5 years later, my sister would have probably said, well, what happened to my brother? She looked outside and seen her car was still there. Her house hadn't been burglarized. She'd know I hadn't been on the street. You know, I'm serious. It sounds funny, but that's where I was at. You know, I walked in here 39 years old, plopped my ass down and said, I'm willing. You know, please love me. Please support me. You know, please teach me how to be a human being. And you folks have done a pretty good job. Not a great job. But you still got some time left to work on it. February this year, I celebrated my 17th anniversary, and a week later, some of us in this room's great friend didn't smoke, never had a bad meal, exercised regularly, was out on tennis courts at the private club he belonged to with his 5-year-old daughter, taking a tennis lesson, and he told the pro, I feel dizzy. I think I'm going to faint. And the pro said, set down so you don't fall down. He sat down, laid back, and died. He had a magnificent funeral. You know, people came from all over. I love this man. This man loved me. He loved, you know, a lot of people. I could have never met him in the street. You know, I hear people saying there are no burning bushes. There's one right there in that white shirt. His name's Bill T. He's a burning bush. If you don't know him, get a chance to know him. He's a giant. We sat in the hallway and he said, get up in front of that room and tell those people, you know, about humility. You know, tell them about the times your ass was on fire. You said, okay, Lord, I agree. I surrender. I never had that. I never had that before. I had people that said, take this gun, go into that drugstore, and put it in that guy's face and take his shit. I had a brain that said, take the gun out your pocket. When you get up close to the guy, stick it in his side and say, give me every one of them bags you got. And then you got to go back 2 days later and buy dope from him again. You know, best I could do. This is the best game in town. This, if you're new here, man, lift your feet up and just go for the ride. The last thing I want to say is, and this is just, you know, I don't speak for NA. NA speaks through it for itself. If you're in here and you're an addict and you don't want to do what we ask you to do, because the secret is there's some shit you got to do to stay here. If you don't want to do that, I feel sorry for you. Because the shit out in that street is getting worse every 8 minutes. You know, get a sponsor. If you're here more than 30 days, you don't have a sponsor, you're in denial. If you're here more than 60 days, you don't have a basic text, you're in denial. When you were on the street, you had a PDR. You had somebody that knew where the dope houses were. You know, do the same thing here. Find somebody. Get in their pocket. Share. I mean, there's nothing to raise your hand. We forget what you say 10 minutes later. You start off, you just share. Hey, my name is Johnny and I'm an addict, and I don't want to go back out in the street no more. I don't know if that's helped you, but when I do my next 7-step, which will be probably in an hour from now or less, or when I get out in that hallway, I'll have more faith that it works. You know, I'll have more willingness to be honest the next time. I will be less quick to write that check. and take it to the giant when I don't get paid for 4 days. I may wait 2 days before. There are consequences, and when I feel the consequences, I go somewhere for that help. And the seventh step is a great place to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Rhoda.
Hi, family. I'm Rhoda, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Rhoda.
And I would like to thank my high power for allowing me to be here. I'm real nervous. Another one of my girlfriends was doing a workshop, and on Monday she got nervous, and I couldn't understand why. I was like, girl, you're going to be all right. And yesterday on my way here, I hit 50 and said, oh, my God, I'm doing a workshop. And I got nervous. Johnny, thank you for sharing. I would like to thank the program committee for asking me to share. When I got here, I've been to about 15 facilities, inpatient, outpatient, one-dayers, and I never thought that I could stop using. I need to identify in. And after coming out of treatment for the last time, I decided to take some direction. I can remember out of all the facilities that I went to, they all gave me a little something. And by the time in 1997 when I surrendered my life to this program, I went to go pack my stuff. And it amazed me that I found every NA, CA, AA literature. And I said, dang. I had the information all the time. Just wasn't willing to use it. And I know I got here when I was supposed to, and I'm real grateful. But when I got out of treatment and I began to come to meetings, I was real scared. I can remember being at a group and the secretary announcing that they needed a coffee maker. And when I was in treatment, my fear was, because I have two kids, I can't commit to Narcotics Anonymous. I can't do anything. I thought getting here, my life would just be a bore. I couldn't go dancing. I couldn't do all this stuff that I thought was the best thing in the world for me. And I can remember just barely raising my hand to commit for this service commitment. But honestly, in my mind, I didn't think it was possible. And as a result of me raising my hand just a little bit, somebody saw me. And they said, okay, there go the coffee maker. And God just had a way of working in my life. Every Saturday that I had to go to that commitment, I ain't had my kids. It's like, how that happen? You know, I was amazed for real because I was so scared because when I got here, I came to so many meetings trying to find a home, not realizing that any NA meeting that I went to was my home. But some of them groups say, hey, you can't bring them kids in here. And I said, all right, I'm going to try the next one. You know, and I kept trying and I kept trying. And that home group that I'm talking about that I served in, maybe 2 years later, they said, look, you got to do something with your kids. We dealt with them for 2 years. What's up? You know, and I'm talking about the fear of serving. And anyway, I ain't go back to that group. By that time, I ended up in area service, and that worked out real good because I didn't have to have my kids there, and God was working in my life. And things just happened as a result of me stepping out on some faith that I could commit. And the seventh tradition, I thank God for it because I kind of read over it before I got here. And the first thing that jumped out at me was commitment. And the seventh tradition is that each group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And before I got here, I was begging, stealing, tricking, and to come in these rooms and to look at that seventh tradition, it tells me that I need to do some things, you know. It helped me to be responsible. It told me that it was a commitment. And in a group, you know, I never really questioned when I got here what the money was for. You know, to me, it really didn't matter. You know, I put my dollar in there anyway. But today, sometimes I find myself, I don't put the dollar in there because the service commitment that I have today, I see a lot of groups not turning into money. So I said, should I put my money in that basket? Because where their money going? It's supposed to, you know, from the way that it's structured, you know, we put our money in the basket, the group gets whatever it needs, and that the rest goes to the, rest go to the area. You know, and if I don't see that you put your money, you came and made a donation and you bought your group some literature, I ain't supporting that group. You know, maybe I'm wrong, you know, but I just don't do it. I try to stay in the rim of this program because the most important thing is that our purpose is to carry the message to the addict who's still suffering. When that group is finished buying the coffee, the tea, their luxuries, their donuts, whatever they need to turn that over to the area. Sitting on a subcommittee, I sit on the outreach subcommittee of D.C. area, thank God. And I'm a one-person subcommittee, and I'm wondering, where y'all at? Can somebody help me? Because what I do, that position requires, the purpose is to go to groups that we haven't seen in the area to find out what's going on. Why y'all ain't made no donation to the group? Why y'all ain't come pick up the literature that we have free for y'all? Where y'all at? You know, the literature talks about that that step is a money issue. And it is, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. I think it also talks about because me as an addict didn't know how to, I ain't had no money. You know, I tried to sell a lot of drugs just to keep my habit going, and I did it, and I did it successfully, and I ended up here, and I thank God for it, but... I don't know. My question, I guess, I remember after being in service for a while, and I've been in service since I was about 90 days clean, and I'm coming up on 5 years in July. And right now I'm saying in my mind, I did my 5 years of service. Let somebody else do. Because when I look at the amount of folk in Narcotics Anonymous, why am I one-person subcommittee? I don't understand. I don't understand with two kids dragging them along, but what dawned on me that I said that I needed to at 5 years, I'm done because I need to take care of my kids. What dawned on me was that when I go to a meeting, women ain't hardly in there. They home taking care of their kids. I'm like, shit, I better get smart and go take care of my kids too. I can't serve in Narcotics the rest of my life. You know, so I'm willing to do something on a group level. I know when I got here, I can remember me and a group of people, because I was angry at Narcotics Anonymous members, because why y'all not supporting us, you know? I remember having a posse ready to go to the area, ready to come to the group saying, where y'all let you, ain't you coming to help us serve on the subcommittee? You know, where y'all at? You know, you come to a convention, we got, what, about 5,000 people? One person serving on a subcommittee? Y'all asking me to go to 77 groups by myself in a month. I can't do it. I can't do it by myself. You know, I don't know. Me and that posse was ready to come up and go there. And I had to get on my knees, and that's a part of my seventh step. I had to get on my knees and ask God to help me because Narcotics Anonymous will go on without me. It'll go on. You know what I'm saying? And I had to understand that. And when it hit me that Narcotics Anonymous been flowing for many a years, you know, I'm just another person, you know, willing to serve. And I can remember when I got here that on my wall I wrote, God, if you need me, I'm available. Where did that come from? All I did in my addiction was served other people. You know, so I got in here and I was like, I got served. And I'm all right with it. I love it. A lot of people, a couple of my friends, you know, I complain sometimes. Like, oh, Lord, I'm tired. You know, I went to area, I went to regional, and I went here and I went there. I love that stuff. You know, I love serving. And I thank God for the willingness to serve, because the fear told me I couldn't serve because I got two kids. And I'm talking about being locked up and bound in self-centered fear. And as a result of stepping out on some faith, this program has worked for me. A person that I used to use with from my neighborhood in here. 8 months clean. Good God Almighty. Because in my community, when I got there, I was the only one using. And I felt like, at the end of my using, I felt like I had gotten the whole community high. And when I got out of treatment, my mom said that everybody clean. Damn. I don't know. Thank God for the seventh tradition. And that I can be responsible. That it's a commitment not only to you, but to God. It's a commitment when you put your money in there, and that person that you all elect to bring that donation to help carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know, I'm going to shut up because I want to babble. And the seventh tradition to me is real simple. You know what, wait a minute. I ain't even touch on the piece that of not allowing other organizations or groups, I'm sorry, to support us. We stand alone. And that's good news. That's good news that we can stand alone. I can remember as a part of my outreach duty, I went to a group. Somebody said, look, we need some help over here. We got the preacher over here buying us donuts, sandwiches. And I went over there. I said, okay, let me see what's going on. Went over there, and, you know, the preacher was there, and he was laying it all out. And I asked, you know, one of the chairpersons, what was going on? And they said, well, the people that come in here don't have a whole lot of money. So the preacher provide coffee, tea. We give the preacher all of our money so that he can go and get, you know, our refreshments. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. So I went to the preacher and I said, excuse me, but according to our seventh tradition, we can't accept your stuff. And he was like, well, no, I'm doing it as a favor, you know, da-da-da. And I said, okay, and thank God for committed people in service, because a month later, that group was no longer giving a preacher the money. That group was coming to the area making donations, and that group was supplying its own refreshments. You know, and I'm like, whoa. There's some good stuff going on here. And what I come to find out in those instances of groups is sometimes we just don't know. And that's what I found out when I wanted a posse to come and say, Narcotics Anonymous member, what you doing over there and why you ain't doing that and why I'm out here to 10 o'clock at night with my two babies and they probably ain't eat yet. You know what I'm saying? But I wanted this posse going on, and what I realized is that Narcotics Anonymous is just going to take care of itself. It's real, real, real simple. And that was good that as a result of even seeing how that situation and that group worked out, is that God is with us. God is here, you know, and that's good. But I'm going to go ahead and shut up, and thanks for allowing me to share.
Okay, I'd like to thank Murda for speaking. I'd like to thank Johnny again for speaking. Before we open up the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time. Also, try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are willing to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the taping person so they can turn off the recorder. Okay, meeting's open.
We got 15 minutes.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named Benjamin. I'm from Philadelphia, the inner city area. Well, thank y'all. Thank y'all for having this convention here. That's seven traditions. When I came around 7 years ago, you know, it wasn't a question about money. But like from the first day, I say from my first 5 days I was in service. I was stewardess of my home group. From there, they elected me to be the GSR. And from there, I went on to another home group where I was elected, went on to the area service. I was the meeting list chair of the inner city area in Narcotics Anonymous. And I too was a one-person committee. And it hurt to see how so many addicts are running around the city, but like, there's not that many coming to area service. Our area service structure suffers in the Philadelphia area. I guess that's all over the United, all over the world, basically. You know, like, I heard something last night in the meeting, because, like, I'm really fooled up, man, because I've been coming to this convention since I had 4 months. You know, like, my 7 years down the road, I could never give back to Narcotics Anonymous, but Narcotics Anonymous has given to me. I'm an addict to use for 30-something plus years, and, like, I'm still hearing war stories. You know, when I come here, man, I just got up out of my room, you know, like, I made the sunrise meeting for the first time, and, like, that was overwhelming. You know, to sit on the beach. After the meeting was over, it started raining. You know, God has been good to us. You know, God has been good to me. I know that today. And, like, that seven tradition, you know, like, my home group, the No More Run home groups of Philadelphia, inner city area, we meet every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And, like, we're a home group that struggles constantly. But one thing I found out, man, like, I can look up in that basket some nights, man, like, out of four or five people, see $25. You know, God is good to us. You know, like, he keeps the doors open. I spend every bit of I'm the treasurer. I'm the GSR. Hey, I'm anything else my home group needs. There's only about three of us, four of us in the home group. You know, but the thing is, we keep the door open. And, like, through that seventh tradition, we keep the door open. Like, sometimes we come out our pockets if we got to. We do what we have to do. I mean, our home group is broke, but it's a happy one. You know, people come to our home group meeting, people come to our business meeting and say, man, y'all should be a comedian act. I mean, like, what is there to squabble about? What's good for the group is good for the addict. You know, we get the business at hand done and tell jokes the rest of the night. You know, not a whole bunch of squabbling in my home group. And I love my home group, you know, but like, that's seventh tradition. God gave it to us to work with. Only what we have to give, you know. What comes in through our little basket, we work with it. You know, we used to have the donuts, the coffee and all that. We just had to give it up. We didn't say we was going to feed you when you come there. We keep the doors open. You know, we keep the desk all there. You want to, I mean, if the doors are open, then you got a problem. You know, I don't know, man. I just figured I need to get up here and just share that little bit. Cause like, just, you know, I love this convention here. I love the wide open spaces. And after I leave, I'm going to fly my kite for a little while. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Mayor.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael. I'm an addict. I'm from the Tidewater area. And
Welcome.
I was real touched by that. And I didn't know I was going to come up here and share, but I heard an addict sharing about the struggles in their home groups with the Southern tradition. And I sit down and realize how fortunate our home group is. Our home group, which is Trust the Process in Newport News, Virginia, meets 5 days a week. And we're the only home group, I think, and I'm pretty sure in that area, that meets 5 days a week, and it's 9:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock. And believe it or not, we generate more money than any other home group in the area. It's nothing for us to turn over anywhere from $450 to $600 a month. And we do everything we need to do to support our home group. We sell more books than anyone else. And the reality is, we are a morning meeting. And normally, the people that come to our meeting don't last very long so far as staying around, because they get jobs, they relocate, they're fresh out of treatment. But as their lives, they start putting their lives together, they go on and become productive members of the society we live in. And I've been there forever. I work a night job. And sometimes, and I'm there every day because we're in a church and they won't give but one person a key. And they won't give but one person the code to the alarm. That's me. I have to be there. Some mornings I really, really don't want to go. But I know by the grace of God that if something ever happened, I couldn't go to that meeting, I don't know what I'd do. Because that's my lifeline. I can't take a night off work to go to a meeting. Not realistically, you know. Occasionally, yeah, but that's just won't work. And you know what? Really, I believe in the seventh tradition, but in reality, we are not fully self-supporting. Because I know that being in a meeting 5 days a week, if we had to pay for the air conditioning, to pay for the toilet paper, to pay for the 50 people that flush the toilet two or three times a meeting, and all those other things that we pay for, we'd never be able to do it, even with the amount of money that we generate. Our rent is like, see nobody from this area, we only pay like $50 a month in rent, which averages out to about $10 a day. You know what I'm saying? I mean, $10 a week. There's no way that, and realistically, we are fully self-supporting. However, we do have an agreement with the facility that they won't use our name. And what happened was they took our name and they said that they have an NA ministry. And man, they came down on, and other home groups came down on us like, they're going to kick y'all ass they're going to drop your name from the rolls, you know. So what I had to do was, because we had that same problem at another facility, and I was new in that home group at the time, and we packed that shit up and ran because we thought that world was going to kick us out of the damn NA. So we packed up and ran, found another home group, another location, and that didn't work out, and we ended up in this facility, and the same thing happened again. But by this time, I said, I ain't running no more. I went to that pastor and had gotten a retraction statement or whatever you want to call it. And I had it typed up, and he signed it, and I had it notarized. And I put it in our files. I said, if anybody will read, you know, we got what they call it, in our area, they got a newsletter. And they put it in a newsletter that this NA meeting was their ministry. And it wasn't a pastor that did it, it was a secretary, because you know how people get, they want to take credit for all these people that come to this morning meeting. We had more people come to the meeting than they had come to their Bible study. And they was like, oh, what did these people do that draw these people in here like this? 5 days a week, you know, and they want a piece of that. They want bragging rights. But I went to them and I told the pastor that we can't accept this. This is not NA. We cannot be associated with you in any form. That's why we must pay rent. Because they really didn't want the rent. But I let him know that we had to. Under no circumstance could we not pay rent there, because we must be fully self-supporting, you know. And I got some home group members that they think we should have a more say-so than other home groups in area because we give more money. And it's not about the money. See, not only do I open the door, I'm also the treasurer. And you get a lot of $1 bills. And a lot of time I got a thing of $1 bills in my pocket like that, you know. And sometimes I like carrying that money around like it's mine. You know, it feels good to have money in your pocket, you know. But I have never spent any of it, thank God. And I hope I never will. But I guess why I'm up here is because I don't know why I'm up here. I just feel like that I didn't know that. I mean, when you don't see other home groups struggle with paying their bills and the coffee we pay for. But we got members that bring, they're so glad to be clean. They don't mind stopping at Krispy Kreme and bringing in 2 dozen donuts. Or stopping at the food line and bringing in 2 or 3 packs of those, you know, $3-4 cookies, you know. And so we don't have a problem with refreshments. And we spend like $70 a month in coffee and the supplies that go along with it, the cups, the creamer. We got addicts in our home group that they won't use sweet and low. They got to have equal because sweet and low, it's got saccharin in it. So they must have equal. They won't use a plastic spoon and put it in the water so the next person can use it to stir their coffee. They must have a stirrer. You know what I mean? These are people that used to do like I used to pick up stuff off the floor. You know, now I can't use that spoon behind her. I remember when she was using. She used to. So did you. You know, but I'm just saying how we as addicts, well, I'm speaking for me, can get in here and get a little clean time and forget where we came from, what we did, and why we did it. You know what I'm saying? Just for the sake of getting high. And I'm real grateful that we don't struggle as a home group financially. And what I know is that the individuals that we come in contact with, they're real willing to give up that dollar. Rarely anybody gives up more than a dollar. If you give up more than a dollar, somebody think you're showing off, you know. And we get a lot of pennies and nickels and dimes, but we're very, I've seen that and we're very fortunate. And thanks, let me share.
I'd like to thank everyone who came up and shared.